Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting in Kansas City, Missouri, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's the 13th day of November 2015. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. He'll stay with us for the second half hour of our program. Commodity Week coming up, recorded yesterday, of course, already up on the website. This is a great program. In fact, a really good program, one that you need to listen to. We talk about some structural change that may or may not be taking place in the commodity markets and how distribution is happening across the planet. A bit later in this program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Jim Angel will be here. And along the way, we'll discuss a brand new movie, a little documentary about wheat harvest out west with some folks that are combiners. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon, the 13th day of November. December corn futures at $3.58 and a quarter, down 3 and 3 quarters. The March 4 cents lower at $3.65 and a half. The May down 3 and 3 quarters at $3.71 and 3 quarters. And July off 4 cents, $3.77 the settlement price. December contract down 4 at $3.87 and 3 quarters. Soy complex now nearby November soybeans at $8.59, down 10 and a quarter. January at $8.55 and a quarter, 7 and 3 quarters lower. The March at $8.56 and a quarter, down 7 and 3 quarters at the end of the day. And May futures at $8.62, down 6 and 3 quarters. November beans of next year down a nickel at $8.74. Bean meal off $2.60 at $2.88.80. And the bean oil down 40 cents at $27.04. Wheat futures at $4.95 and 3 quarters, down 2 and a quarter. July for the soft red at $5.02 and a half, down a penny and 3 quarters. The hard red wheat at $4.99 and 3 quarters, up a penny and 3 quarters. For the day. Live cattle futures in the December at $130.17 and a half. They finished down $2.97 and a half. November feeders were 65 cents lower at $174.72 and a half. Jans were down 280 at $164.10. And lean hogs were 100 pounds down $1.30 at $54.80. Find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. All of our programming is posted there not long after it airs on the radio.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Crude oil for the day at $1.02 lower, $40.73 a barrel to trade. December in the ethanol at $1.46 and 4 tenths is up 2 and 3 tenths of a cent at this hour. Gasoline, the RBOB, the wholesale price there, down 3 and 4 tenths of a cent at about $1.23 and 8 tenths. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.38 and 3 tenths is 2 and 3 tenths of a cent lower. And the natural gas on the day at $2.36. up a dime on the afternoon. The outside markets show us the Dow Jones Industrial Average about 187 points lower, 17,210. The U.S. dollar is up 0.383 at 99.1. And gold futures at 1081.50. That's $1,081.50. They're up 50 cents for the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says sunny skies, a high of 52, breezy west-northwest winds at 16 to 23. Tonight, clear with a low of 29, west winds at 5 to 11. And tomorrow, Saturday, sunny skies and a high of 56 degrees on a south-southwest wind at 7 to 15. Saturday evening, clear, a low of 38, southwest winds at 8 to 11, gusting to 15 miles an hour. And then on Sunday, sunny skies, a high of 60 degrees, southwest winds at 8 to 16 miles an hour. We'll get some increasing clouds into Sunday night with a low of 40 degrees. And by the time we get to Monday, a 50% chance of showers to start the work week. It'll be cloudy with a high of 53 degrees. Monday night, showers and 47. Tuesday, showers and 61. Wednesday, showers and 61 as well. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour here on Illinois Public Media.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 13th day of November. I am Todd Gleason here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. We're joined now by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's out of Atchison in Kansas, but yesterday Mike made the trip here to Kansas City. Mike, it was really good to see you and have you in-house for what was really a great commodity week recorded yesterday afternoon.
It really was. I don't think that the ag sector is going to enjoy it too much, but I think it's very educational. And, you know, from my standpoint, Todd, I really wanted to try and get an idea, because that was my first NAFB meeting to come to. Really wanted to try and get an idea and a feel for where the ag economy sat, not just in my office, but, you know, with the largest multinational companies and all of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters in one room, essentially, and get an idea of whether the farm economy is going to be an interesting and very important time period with crop insurance prices especially. And I really say this and trying to talk about this not because I'm negative the market. I think that's yet to be determined, whether the range-bound trade ownership and cycle lows can come in here in early 2016. But I think it goes back to, if you're a landlord or if you are a seed dealer, if you are a fertilized dealer, if you're a market analyst, you know, what does it look like depending upon what the February crop price looks like? So it's a big time. I mean, it's a big, important time in our industry, and it's a time where we all need to stick together at this point, I think.
Were you able to talk to enough folks? And there are a whole bunch of folks. Most people will not have been to this event because, of course, it's for farm broadcasters and it's our self-improvement convention. But it's a place where we put ourselves together with the users that we're with on the air oftentimes. So many of the commercial farm broadcasters use the brokers like yourselves. They also use representatives from many companies. And there were, I don't recall how many companies are in the room, but there's a trade show, and it's not a small trade show. It is a large trade show with I think almost 10 aisles. Were you able to get an idea of where Syngentas and the DuPonts and the Granulars and the BASFs, the John Deeres of the world think this agricultural economy will be headed in the next 12 to 18 months?
They met my expectations. I came down knowing from some banking and finance people that I work with that they were starting to look a lot more seriously at the balance sheets. The Federal Reserve is starting to look a lot more seriously at the ag balance sheets. And I've been tracking the quarterly earnings for the Deeres, for the Agriums, for the Caterpillars, for the Syngentas and the Monsantos of the world. They have not looked pretty. And as we discussed on the Commodity Week yesterday, one of the things that I noted was that we had previously, when we had weak growth in the ag economy here in the United States, we could make up for it in the emerging markets, but we don't have that this time around. And so I think that's why the ag economy raised a flag to me. And so when I came down, I started asking questions to probably half dozen contacts and people, and to get a feel for what was going on. And not really many people wanted to talk about it. So it made me feel like that the mindset that I had coming down was correct, that February is going to be a big deal. A lot of decisions are going to be made based upon that crop insurance price.
Yeah, so you've mentioned that a couple of times. What are the problems you're anticipating that may or may not show up?
Well, as we talked about, I don't think that we have the yields east of the Mississippi that USDA believes. If they hold on to those kind of yields and we don't see export demand come back and commodity investment come back, or we don't see an El Nino-type market, I think the trade's going to start to have to realize that at some point you're going to see a multiplier effect go backwards on you when it comes to the ag economy. If you have a lower base price from crop insurance, you're probably going to see lower lending by your banker and financial lady or gentleman. And at that point, then the farmer's going to have to start cutting back. And where he cuts back is important, because essentially a farmer, whatever dollar he receives in the farm economy and profits, he usually multiplies that by about 1.25, essentially. And so it's a big multiplier effect. And I think you're seeing it in the real economy right now. I mean, take, for instance, this week, we had crude oil go down and plumb towards those lows of around $38 a barrel. This time, though, with the dollar going up, the equities and the stock market could not rally. They tried both days, but they actually made new lows and are going to finish the week pretty nasty when it comes right down to it. And similarly, we talked about the Federal Reserve here. And then third, we actually saw Informa numbers come out this morning and really kind of confirm what you and I are talking about. They took corn acres down 700,000 for 2016. They raised bean acres by 1.4 million acres. They're now up to 85.3, and their previous estimate was 83.9. So they really jumped bean acres at the expense of corn and some other commodities. And I think this is where we're starting to see this fluidity, you know, and this rubber hit the road as far as the prices of the new crop.
That would be based primarily on the inability or the wants of the farmer not to put corn in the ground because it costs too much.
That's exactly right. And right now, the trade doesn't seem to care about that because of the energy, because of the emerging markets. And first and foremost, in the crosshairs of the emerging markets is China. I mean, Financial Times actually said today in one of their articles that commodity prices have become a barometer for the health of China's economy. And I would say it's a barometer for the health of the overall emerging market. So it's being traded and invested upon based upon the health of the emerging market and the Chinese economy, not necessarily looking at too many supply demand fundamentals, albeit the weekly and monthly export demand continues to be subpar for both wheat and corn.
Any final word or word of encouragement for producers who all have a lot of corn and a lot of soybeans yet to sell?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where if the cycles are anywhere close to being correct and what we're seeing in the dollar right now, if the Federal Reserve does raise rates in mid-December, I think you're at the last stages of the dollar rally and the last stages of the investment lows when it comes to commodities. In my opinion, Todd, the worst thing that could happen at this stage of the game is that we see the Federal Reserve hold off at the behest of the IMF or at the behest of the European Central Bank, and then all of a sudden the market all over the place loses confidence and believes that we're going into a worldwide recession, and that's why the Fed is not, you know, being as clear as it should be. So that would be problematic, and that would have to make me have to look at some 2016 hedges, knowing that I've got a lot of 2015 corn in the cash market still in the bin, even though I sold earlier in the week in the year for the futures, still have a lot in the bin in the cash market right now.
It was great to have you here in Kansas City, by the way. Thanks so much for coming up to do Commodity Week.
The shows are always better when we're in person, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Thanks so much. That, of
you
course,
betcha,
is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And he is on this week's edition of Commodity Week. That'll come up immediately following the closing market report this afternoon. The other guests include Arlen Suderman of FC Stone and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. Commodity Week, very interesting program. If you haven't heard it yet, stick with us for the whole hour. It'll air on many of these radio stations this afternoon, some of them again tomorrow morning. And, of course, you can always pick it up off our website at willag.org, where you can also purchase your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference. That's just $30. Do it right now at farmassetsconference.com, willag.org, or by calling this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065, during, of course, regular business hours. Hey, do you like combines? And if you do, are you really interested in learning more about the men and women that use them? Well, out west, in fact. If so, you're really in luck. There's a documentary about that. It's called The Great American Wheat Harvest. A couple of combiners, in fact, are here in Kansas City at the NAFB convention, and they took some time to talk with me earlier today. Dan Meisner runs a four-combine crew, and Tracy Zarin and her family run just one combine. They both follow the fall harvest from Texas to Montana. Tracy, what was the inspiration that prompted you to open your world to a documentary filmmaker?
The seed actually came from the High Plains Journal, what's it called, Dan?
All Aboard Wheat Harvest
blog with High Plains Journal. And Conrad Weaver from Maryland happened to see that online, and his wife was looking over his shoulder and said, hey, why don't you do a documentary on them? And that's where the wheels got to spinning. So he contacted me because I was president of the association at the time, and just one thing led to another, and now we've got a DVD.
Who's Conrad Weaver?
He is a producer, a director out of Fredericksburg, Maryland.
Known for anything else?
I think he may have had one other thing that received an award, a telly or something, but this is really his first big documentary, and now he's working on one called Thirsty Land.
Did he have any ag background at all?
He did. He grew up on a farm in Ohio, so he knew a little bit, a dairy farm, so he knew a little bit about farming, nothing about wheat and the harvest. So this was all new to him, too.
You are the executive director of the U.S. Custom Harvesters. What kind of an organization is it?
We are a group of approximately 450 custom harvesting businesses, both grain and forage. And then we also have some vendors, not vendors, associate members that support the harvest, and they are members as well. And we're just basically the voice of the custom harvester. We're there to support them in any way we can.
And you're actually, your family actually is a custom harvest group.
Yeah, if you can call it a crew. It's my husband and I. We have one combine, but we do make the trek, and we've done it for over 30 years. So,
Dan, you also operate a custom harvest setup?
That is correct. My dad started our business back in 1970 when he came out of Vietnam, out of the war, and it was to supplement the farming income, to be able to have the equipment there and to be able to use that equipment to get our own crop out and to be able to help other farmers. And that just kind of blossomed and flourished, and back in the late 90s, he actually sold our farm, and we moved from South Dakota all the way to Oklahoma to be closer to the start of our harvest. So it's been something that I was born and raised in, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
And how many combines do you operate?
I operate anywhere between 2 to 4, depending on where we're at and what we do. But ours is a pretty strictly family operation. We do have a couple hired men, depending on where we're at through the year. But I was born and raised driving combines. My best combine driver is my little sister. She's a business partner with me. And my mom still goes on harvest, and she's a business partner as well.
What other equipment do you take along with you when you're out?
Not only do we have the combines, but a lot of guys have tractors and grain carts, which we do, and then the semis, the support equipment to be able to get the crop hauled in. But we also have to haul our home with us. You know, we live in a trailer, a 30-foot camper, and that has to go with us as well, because when we leave for harvest in the 10th, 15th of May, we aren't back until about Thanksgiving.
How do you organize, Dan, things like diesel delivery? The things that you really need to continue to work, that farmers are always continuously thinking about, with the exception in the Midwest, it's usually just in the tank on the farm, and they may have a local supplier that they know they can call and have the truck come out, but it would be unique for you to have that much diesel on a daily basis.
Definitely. That's one of the things that you have to deal with. You know, depending on the operations and where they're at, I do a lot of fuel through my farmer contracts, and he's able to buy more fuel at a time because he knows that I'll be coming, and he provides the fuel for me. A lot of us have fuel tanks not only on our service trucks, but fuel trailers to be able to haul fuel. That's something that we've been working on to be able to get passed through legislature to be able to haul up to 1,000 gallons of fuel to be able to get to these combines, because you know, combines today are burning around 200 gallons of fuel per day per combine. Forage harvesters are 350 to 400 gallons per day per combine. And so that's definitely something that takes some time and some logistics and to be able to figure out how to get it to the combines to keep them running.
Was it unique to have somebody with a video camera in the combine with you?
It was actually a privilege to have Conrad there, because he sat there and told us to do what we do, and he really just sat back and took video of it. He let us do what we do, and he captured that in this film. I think I've had the privilege of being a part of other different projects, and I can honestly say that Conrad had a gift to see what we do and to capture that on film. The ability was within Conrad. We just did our work and did what we did.
Is there a scene, an example that tells you that he, I won't say understood, but captured what you really do? What is it that was different about the way he videotaped you than anything else you've seen? What is it that spurred you maybe out of one single scene that said, ha, he got it, he understands, he knows, this tells my story?
I would have to go back to a scene that he captured. We were down in the Texas Panhandle, and he was out videotaping, and my family was out there. I've got 16 nieces and nephews. Don't have any children, but just nieces and nephews. And there's a scene where I'm actually talking to my sister, explaining to her where she's got to go next, and I've got a nephew sitting there and a niece sitting there that were wanting to ride in the combine. And I think he just captured the communication between siblings of myself and my sister, but watching that next generation sitting there ready to get in the combine. He really captured the reason why we do what we do with that family atmosphere.
He understood, at least in that scene, that the children of the family, in your case, was growing up in the business. And while they weren't quite a part of the business, they traveled with it and understood, unlike many other families across the Midwest whose parents go to work in an office space. They know what was happening in your business.
Absolutely. I think that's something that we've jokingly said to Conrad, that he's got to come back out in 20 years. Because in 20 years, my little nephew, Leslie, is going to be the one driving the combine. You know, when the film came out and he started, he was only 4 years old. Now he's seven and he's already driving combine. He doesn't drive it alone, but he drives combine all the time with me today at 7 years old. So I keep telling Conrad he's got to come back out and capture that next generation 20 years from now.
Tracy, where can you find this documentary?
Well, I know that Conrad still sells it on the Great American Wheat Harvest website. Yeah. And then it's also on the U.S. Custom Harvesters website, which is www.uschi.com. And I was going to add to what Dan said. He really captures the emotion as far as the custom harvester and the relationship between the ground and the farmer and the family. If you watch that, I guarantee you're gonna feel it as well.
Does it make you tear up when you watch it?
Every time. Every single time.
Yeah.
Every time. At the very beginning, when he's got a combine in a wheat field, it's an instantaneous tearing up. But that's the weirdness of me.
Maybe not.
Well, I hope that there are other people out there that feel the same way, but I guarantee that you can't watch that without a tear.
Tell me about a journey for you from one end of the nation to the other.
As far as the summer goes, our journey has been a long one as far as our family goes. And my oldest daughter is now almost 30 years old, but she started to go on harvest when she was 4. So getting those children packed up and ready to go on the harvest run has been probably the hardest thing for me, because we've taken them away from their home setting. We've taken them away from their friends, but they don't know that. They don't know what it's like to be gone in the summertime. So we load up our trailer, we load up our family, and we head for the southern states. And we're usually gone about 120 days away from home. We don't get back. And we are forced to have great family time, and it's built a really tight unit.
I can only imagine that it's built an extraordinarily tight unit. How many in your family? How many do you travel with?
We have 4 daughters. Only 2 still go with us. The older 2 stay home. They have real jobs. Our oldest daughter is married, has 2 little kids. So, but if they were given the opportunity to go again, I think they would do it in a heartbeat. It's that the emotion I was talking about. My daughter has come. The number 2 daughter has come down to catch up with us at certain points, and she has tweeted about the tears that she gets when she sees that first combine in a wheat field. She gets it. She understands that.
As she asked Grandma and Grandpa, I don't know what you go by, to think about taking the grandchildren with you on occasion.
We've got a grandson who's just 2.5 years old, and I swear these combines are genetic, because his dad is not a combiner. He has not anything to do with equipment. But, man, does he love his combines. It's amazing. So I'm sure that he'll be with us if we're still out there.
So, again, if you'd like to pick this up, you can visit a couple of websites that you've heard about already. Should be available on Amazon. Should be available maybe in Walmart. It's called The Great American Wheat Harvest. Tracy and Dan, thank you so much for being with me.
You're welcome. It's great.
Thank you.
It's National Indian Pudding Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1805, the people of Vienna, Austria claimed the invention of the Frankfurter. but the history is murky. It's also said that the Frankfurter came from Frankfurt, Germany in 1484, 5 years before Columbus sailed for the New World. Wieners and Frankfurters don't become hot dogs until they're put in a bun or roll. By the way, the corn dog was introduced at the Texas State Fair in 1942. In 1895, the first shipment of canned pineapple left Hawaii. In 1927, the Holland Tunnel opened, the first Hudson River automobile tunnel from New York City to New Jersey. And in 1930, the Rollo-Lactor was developed by the Walker Gordon Dairy. It was a 50-stall revolving milking platform that could mechanically milk over 1,500 cows in 7 hours. The glass-enclosed revolving platform carried 150 cows at a time that were washed, dried, and mechanically milked twice daily. The machine was displayed at the 1939 New York World's Fair as part of the Dairy World of Tomorrow exhibit in the Borden Building. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on this 13th day of November. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll hear about the weather forecast for the weekend. That with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. Quick reminder that if you haven't yet picked up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference, that's coming up at the end of this month, the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. Probably ought to do that right now. willag.org. That's willag.org. Farm Assets Conference. 800-898-1065. Tickets are just $30. This is a great program. Don't miss it. Don't miss this program in Normal, Illinois. We'll kick off the morning at around 10:30 a.m., but the annual conference for the Illinois corn growers starts at 8 a.m. in the morning. So you come, you go to the conference for the corn growers for their annual meeting, and then pick up the Farm Assets Conference, which is a $30 bill, and we'll go through the price of corn and soybeans, some of the changes that will be happening, and that will take place, certainly, as big data becomes part of the agricultural world. We'll take up weather forecasts as it relates to water quality and the fertilizers that you put on your field and how they move through the water system, especially through the Illinois and Mississippi River basins, and what that might mean for nutrient management and the ability of farmers to manage the nutrients themselves as opposed to being regulated. And finally, we'll discuss what the value of farmland will look like. That's all at the Farm Assets Conference in Normal, Illinois on the 24th day of this month. The cost is just $30. Get your tickets right now online, willag.org, farmassetsconference.com, or call 800-898-1065. Now, here's Jim Angel.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey. Temperatures so far for November in Illinois are running 6.4 degrees above average. The statewide average rainfall was 1.1 inches. That's about 80% of average. The wettest area is far southern Illinois with up to 2 to 3 inches of rain. Northern Illinois is about average, while parts of central and western Illinois remain dry. From the Water Survey Network, 4-inch soil temperatures under bare ground range from 50 degrees in the north to 58 degrees in the south. Believe it or not, this puts us only a few days behind the average dates for reaching 50 degrees. These dates range from November 10th in the north to November 18th in the south. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturday will range from the mid-50s in the north to the low 60s in the south. Overnight lows will be in the 30s. Sunday will be slightly warmer with highs in the upper 50s and low 60s with lows in the 40s. Highs on Monday through Thursday will range from the low to mid-50s in the north to the upper 50s and low 60s in the south. Overnight lows during the week will be in the 40s across the state. There is a chance of rain every day from Monday through Friday as a slow-moving system moves across the Midwest, Potential rainfall totals are impressive and range from 1 to 3 inches in the northern half of the state and 3 to 4 inches in the southern half. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, part of the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois.
Our thanks, of course, to Jim Angel and all the meteorologists that you hear throughout the week here at willag.org. You can check them out online. While you're there, pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. Stay with us if you can for the second part of the half hour. Commodity Week is coming up. Our panelists include Arlen Suderman, Matt Bennett, and Mike Zuzulow.